Thank you. Councilmember Heller, if you would lead us in the pledge, I'd appreciate it.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. City Attorney, do we have any closed session reports to report out tonight?
No reportable action, Mayor.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate that. And with that, council member reports. Start to my left, Councilmember Addis.
Yeah, July and August are months to celebrate because it's the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment when women got the right to vote. So I see applause back there. On June 4th, the Board of Supervisors are going to honor this with a 12:45 reception in their lobby and then a 1:30 proclamation recognizing all of the women who have been elected to office in San Luis Obispo County. And then I would like to invite the public to office hours that I'll be holding June 18th with an Eagle Rock hike. So we'll meet at Cerrito Place at 3 and then do a little hike from 3:30 to 4:30. And then I wanted to announce my July office hours as well because I think Project Surf is going to be here at the meeting tonight. And so July 25th from 3 to 5 at Coleman Park, I'll have office hours where we can see the kids get out of the water and the public can come talk to me about whatever there's has on your mind, whatever's on your mind in terms of council issues. So thank you.
Great, thank you. That was June 4th at 12:30 at the SLO Chambers.
So okay. Board of Supervisors is June 4th, 12:45
thank
in
you.
The lobby for refreshments, and then 1:30 for the proclamation.
Thank you. Good, Councilmember Davis.
Yes, thank you. I want to acknowledge tonight one of our outstanding student athletes. Morro Bay High School participated in CIF State Finals at Clovis this past weekend. And one of our juniors, Joy Riddell, placed fifth in the state in the high jump. He jumped 6 feet, 9 inches. And I want to give you an idea of what that is. So if I'm standing here and Joey starts down there, he's going to jump over me with 5 inches to spare. So Mr. Riddell was the only SLO County athlete to place on the podium. But also freshman Hazel Sunnerborg placed seventh in the state in the 137-pound girls wrestling, and junior Lucas Eisenwein placed 12th in the state in the 50-meter freestyle. So John Andre told me that this has been an outstanding year for Morro Bay High School athletics. We had 13 league championships this year, and 21 of our 24 teams qualified and participated in the CIF championships. And what Mr. Andre says in his final statement, the thing I am most proud of is that more than 65% of our students participated in sports this year. So that's just a great accomplishment for our little school. on a different note, Morro Bay is famous for being a pet-friendly town. We welcome people to bring their pets here. But we also require that when people take their pets, their dogs, particularly into public, that they put them on a leash. This is just a matter of common courtesy. And it's also a safety precaution because no matter how friendly your dog is, dogs bite. So we need to be responsible and we need to control our pets. And thirdly, I'm going to have office hours again this Saturday from 9 o'clock until 10 o'clock at Sun and Buns. And I welcome anyone to come and Talk to me about anything. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Councilmember McPherson.
Thank you. If I could just follow on briefly to Ms. Addis's comments about the League of Women Voters and celebrating 100 years. I am really bummed that I'm not going to be there because I'm going to be in Minnesota. But I just wanted to alert people that there will be a number of events during the year culminating in a big event in September. So we'll try to keep everybody posted on what the League is doing to celebrate women's right to vote. This is good news from the County of SLO. The Behavioral Health Department is going to begin having walk-in clinics, alcohol and drug walk-in clinics at the old County Health Building at, I think it's 760 Morro Bay Boulevard, starting in July. So I will keep you posted on that also. But that's good news because we're starting to get the county health back in our community. We had a meeting or an announcement at our last meeting about June 7, which is Hunger Awareness Day, and we will have people in City Park collecting donations of food. So just remember that. Come out, bring whatever you can, and there'll be folks that will be collecting it. So that's my announcements. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Councilmember Hiller?
I do not have formal office hours, but I do like meeting with people, so please feel free to text me or call me anytime, 471-1257. I'll be happy to meet with you and talk to you. 471-1257. Thanks.
Great. 805 ISM too, right? Yes. Good. Okay. And I just wanted to give a shout-out to all those that were involved with Amgen, which was on the 15th, the day after our last council meeting. Great job on the part of staff and a great finish, exciting finish, lots of folks in town, very successful event. Happy to be one of the cities that hosted the finish for Amgen. And just again, thanks to all of those involved. Jen Little, thank you for your involvement and everything that you and your staff did, as well as all the volunteers in the community. With that, turn it over to our city manager for your report, sir.
No report tonight, thanks.
No report tonight, okay. Then we will move to presentations. First up is Hourglass presentation. Melissa James is here. And Mr. Collins, did you want to introduce Melissa to the crowd?
Yeah, excited and delighted to introduce Melissa James, who's the CEO for the Hourglass Project. And as opposed to me trying to explain what it is, I'll let her do it. But it's a new private public venture to explore how we can best utilize all of our resources in the region. And the region includes not only SLO, but those that are neighboring us that are really part of our ecosystem from an economic standpoint. But again, I'll let her kind of talk about what Hourglass is and all the exciting things they intend to do for our region in the near future.
Great. Welcome, Melissa. Good to have you this evening.
Thanks for having me, Mayor Henning, members of the council. Melissa James, I'm the new CEO of the Hourglass Project, and we're a new regional economic development organization that was kind of officially founded, I'd say, on February 1st of this year, although it's been kind of a growing discussion and movement throughout the region, probably over the last 18 months. I'll share a little bit with you kind of about where we came from, but at the high level, we're serving the regional economy from Vandenberg to Camp Roberts, which includes 12 cities, 2 counties, and about 500,000 people. And we're looking at creating a future of economic opportunity and prosperity. Some of the kind of foundational layers, I would say, of our approach is that we're looking at creating an entity that is regional, action-oriented, and led by the private sector. So as we, you know, and I'll share a little bit more in just a moment, but as many folks in the region were really coming together after the announcement of the planned closure of Diablo Canyon, it kind of awakened the community to some of the pain points that are lying ahead for us, and also some of the pain points that exist across the region as far as some of the challenges that are shared across cities and communities, and how we might need to foster a new approach to solving challenges and creating an economic future, not only for those residents we have today, but long into the future. And as we kind of looked at our ability to do that on more of a global scale, what we realized was there's a few gaps in our economic development efforts, and that was namely that, you know, the private sector is on a regional scale really isn't leading the economic development conversations. And a lot of times, you know, we aren't action-oriented. We can talk about, study, and, you know, discuss our challenges, but when it comes to really trying to move towards solutions, we come up short. And then, you know, for the most part, in those 12 cities, two counties that I kind of talked about across the Central Coast, we can really work in our silos and be serving our communities really well. But when we start thinking about on the regional scale, there isn't as much collaborative cross-sector, cross-jurisdictional dialogue, although I think that we've seen some shifts in that recently. So we're looking at, you know, creating an approach that leverages the network across the Central Coast, the Coalition of Chambers, which has newly been named as that entity of 13 Chambers of Commerce. We have the EVC and the Economic Alliance down in northern Santa Barbara County, but really wanting to map together the network across the region to be moving towards larger strategic goals to get at some of our challenges. You're not going to be able to read this from where you are, but there's a lot of folks, you know, from the business community, from elected leadership, from government leadership that have kind of come together to really, you know, create this organization. There's folks like Salud Carbajal or Jordan Cunningham at the state and federal levels. There's lots of folks from, you know, Chambers of Commerce and Cal Poly. So it's really been something that has been cross-sector in nature of folks coming to the table to try to create a shared regional approach to creating an economically vibrant economy. Some of the things, and I kind of shared, you know, a catalyst of the discussion was really the closure announcement of Diablo Canyon. But once you really start peeling that back and you say, okay, yeah, we recognize that there's going to be a big economic hit at the closure of the plant, it's really, you know, a conversation that was long overdue of many other challenges that we face in our region with high home prices and low wages and, you know, looking at a lot of the you know, saturation and low productivity jobs and how automation might impact those types of jobs moving into the future. And, we, you know, as you start to really think about some of the challenges over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, it's not hard to imagine a future for the Central Coast region where it becomes an attractive place to visit or to go to school or to retire. But if you need to depend on the economy for a job and family-sustaining wages, that's becoming harder and harder for folks. And that is really where we want to be focusing our efforts to ensure that there is a thriving middle class and that our young families are able to afford to live here and raise their families here. So there's many things that we'll be kind of doing in our portfolio of work. We're here to share with you a little bit about something we're doing on our first step out of the gate. But just generally speaking, one of the things that we believe we need to be doing as a region is not only talking to each other, but talking to folks outside of our region. So as you think about some of the world-class assets that we have along the Central Coast, when you start to think about the entire region, you know, Vandenberg Air Force Base or Diablo Canyon or even the Morro Bay plant and the potential for offshore wind development, we really hold in our community the gateway to new economic frontiers and space exploration or renewable energy. And we need to be trying to leverage those assets in a way that brings economic prosperity here and that brings high-wage, quality jobs for our residents, and trying to map that into a regional strategy and then being able to work collectively to be talking to the folks that have the, you know, the power or the authority to make key decisions, whether that's the federal government, the state government, the military, or private enterprise, to be making the types of investments that we would want to see in some of those types of opportunities. So that's kind of from the advocacy perspective. And then also what goes hand in hand with that is creating a regional brand for the Central Coast. We have that in our tourism industry that, you know, life's too beautiful to rush, and we know that this is a wonderful place to come and visit. But I think that there's a story that we can be telling about that it's also a wonderful place to live and work and raise a family. And that's not a message that is shared. And so really being able to bring the region together under a common vision, a common voice, and a common brand. We're going to be, obviously, as you think about the region as we've defined it, we don't have the type of data that we need to sell who we are and what we're doing. We're going to have to be creating that. We're working with Cal Poly, Amazon, and Deloitte, and you'll hear a little bit more about that, to create some of not only just the economic data, but some resources that will help us, whether you're government or the private sector, to make data-driven decisions. So we'll be creating some of those tools that don't exist. And then where you heard me say a little bit that we, you know, really want to be creating a strong collaborative network across the Central Coast. You see, and I know you here have a wonderful, vibrant chamber of commerce. Many other communities do as well, that you have folks that are working on the local level to support business and support, you know, decision makers in local communities. And we want to be working in a way that's additive to the local communities and the economic development priorities that exist in those types of partnerships, for how we can accelerate and resource and help see ideas, you know, be realized. So that's what we're trying to do in creating of the network. And now I'm going to invite up Andrew Hackelman, VP, that's the two of us at the organization right now, and he's going to share a little bit with you about our jobs plan.
Thank you, Melissa. Mr. Mayor, council members, Andrew Hackelman with Hourglass Project. So we're ticking down the clock here, but I wanted to share with you that the plan that we're embarking on here with our strategic partner, Deloitte, is an effort to get at understanding where we could be in the next 20 or 30 years with respect to jobs. So we're going to set a quantitative goal kind of as a North Star to try and understand where we could be with good, high-paying jobs for Central Coast residents now and into the future. But how we're going to actually do it, it's not going to be Melissa and I. There's two of us. We're planning to kind of look at the region as it is. It's a network of population centers, and we want to leverage that network for the strengths and capacities that exist. So we've already forged a really strong and positive relationship with the Chamber of Commerce, with Erica, and we've also had conversations with some of you and with Scott as well. And we're really looking forward to partnering in the future, because Morro Bay is probably the best city in the county of San Luis, right? Is that the case? I don't know. That's what I've been told.
That is true.
It's true. Okay, good. Good. That's what I was told. That's the information I was going on here. But so the plan that we're working on here is going to be inclusive, and it's going to reflect the values and goals and align with the strategies that each community has. So as we're doing our engagements with the community, we're really going to be floating up from the bottom what each community wants to see in itself, its best self as it grows up, within the kind of the quantitative North Star goal that we have with respect to jobs. So it's not about deciding how things ought to be for the region, but about how each community wants to see itself over the next 20 or 30 years. And so what we've done over the past couple of months is just put some strategic thought into what our universe looks like. And we know that in order to create the conditions for good jobs, we need to focus on things that matter to all industries. So infrastructure, that matters to every city. It matters to the unincorporated areas too. Housing, everyone knows that California suffers from a big housing shortage right now. And we're going to focus on those things, and we're calling these lines of effort, where we're integrating these things over time, because you can't just focus on one thing at one moment in time, and we need to do it with a strategic goal in mind. And we're also going to be focusing on business expansion, because most of the jobs that we're going to create are going to be from the businesses that exist here already. So we need to make sure that they're well taken care of, and that the policies that we have help them thrive and grow and create jobs for the residents that we have. And finally, talent development. And you can kind of see how all of this is kind of a virtuous cycle that has to be created, where if you don't have the housing and the jobs, you can't keep the talent, and you need the talent to have the jobs. So all these things do need to be considered simultaneously and over time so that we're focused on the right things. And so what we're going to be doing is going to be very rapid. We're doing what we're calling a sprint to get to a marathon of implementation. So there's a lot of near-term things that we can be doing and that we will be doing, but that set us on a course over the next 20 or 30 years to point us in the direction that we as a region, each individual community, but as an aggregate, as a whole, that we're pointed in a direction that's going to put us where we would like to be. And so We're doing what we're calling discovery right now, collecting data. We're doing a regional poll of the workforce to find out how people really feel about economic opportunities and prospects for their future. We're also doing stakeholder engagements, which we've briefly touched on. And we're going to be looking at the big assets that Melissa talked about, like Vandenberg Air Force Base, Diablo, and other large opportunities that exist. You know, you can kind of look out the window, and there's some big stacks out there that there's potential reuse opportunities and world-class assets that have a lot of potential, and we can kind of see where those might take us over the next decade. And we're going to build in, and this is probably one of the most important parts, is governance for how this plan will be implemented, because it's going to require cooperation. It's voluntary. It's not something that people will be required to do. So it really does need to reflect the values and the goals of each community. And so that governance is going to be something that will involve each community and all the stakeholders to agree to how they would like to go about implementing the steps and measuring progress against the goals that we set. So everything that we're doing, we're going to do only those things that will have the highest impact and those things that we can measure against the strategic goals that we set. So things that really not only feel good, but actually are making a difference. And that will result in what we're calling the roadmap and action plan that we will have set out in that. It'll be a very broad plan, but it will have those key measurable goals and activities that will help advance us to those goals. And finally, it will be an implementation for a long time. So that's the point of all this, is that the plan is not an end unto itself. It is just to get us started doing actual work and doing the things that we know that we need to do to create conditions for good high-paying jobs for our residents. And that leaves me to this part, so I guess I'm going to talk to this. Okay. So kind of this goes without saying, I think, but what's good for the region is also good for Morro Bay. So investing in infrastructure regionally, investing in housing, all of those things are good for the economy and the workforce and the residents of Morro Bay. And the things that Morro Bay has that other parts of the region don't, those things are also good for the region. So developing assets and investing time and action in the community of Morro Bay in accordance with the values and goals that you all have is something that's going to advance the goals of the region. And leveraging the talent of people on this council, the chamber, and your private sector business owners here is how we're going to take action on the steps that we develop through the strategic process that we just described. And I'd like to turn it over just to close the next 30 seconds to Melissa.
I'll just end it there, and I don't know if you have any questions.
Thank you both, Andrew and Melissa. Any questions from council?
I would just like to know when you think you'll have a plan.
Early fall, so I think around September.
Okay, so fast track.
Yes, we're trying to move at that private sector pace.
Okay, thanks.
Other questions? Yeah, so that means being nimble and quick, right, as opposed to, yeah. We get it. Mm-hmm. Hey, thank you for your efforts, and thank you for the information. We appreciate you being here. Exciting stuff going on. Thanks for meeting with us previously to go over the initiatives in detail, and we look forward to some very positive results in the future.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
All right, thanks. With that, next up is Erica Crawford, our Chamber CEO, for our quarterly Chamber of Commerce presentation. Erica, welcome.
Thank you for having us back.
Of course.
For our quarterly presentation, predictably. Every quarter we'll be back.
Quarterback.
All right, so I'll get started. I see the clock. Erica with the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, Honorable Mayor, City Council, City Staff, thanks for having me. We'll start where I always start, introducing the community and you back to us. So we are 307 business members, multi-industry. Our board of directors is, as you can see, about 50-50 men and women. Hospitality, accommodations, restaurant, professional services, real estate, and development is currently represented on the board. Although they're all there to be fiduciaries of the organization, they're not there to represent industries. Our staff is one full-time and five part-time staff members who are running everything from membership to the visitor center to daily operations and events. We are also advised by committees and task forces. I won't go through all of these, but I'll kind of call out some of the ones that are active, very active at the moment. Start with the Governmental Affairs Committee. It's about 14 individuals. We've been meeting monthly. We've had the pleasure of Scott Graham coming in and presenting general plan LCP education. We've got Eric Endersby coming in next month, presenting some Tidelands Trust background and harborfront issues, waterfront issues. Last month, we had Councilmember Addis and Mayor Heading join us to kind of educate us on local politics, and also some of our representatives from Jordan Cunningham and
Salute Carvajal.
Thank you very much. Senator Manning was on my mind. He was not there. So we've been really active, and the role that all of our committees and task forces take is to ensure that our board of directors, they're being kind of advised, and that our reach isn't just, it's never one voice, and no decisions exist in a vacuum. I think that's really important. We are the Three C's Chamber. I think I've mentioned this before. No longer are we parties, parades, and pageants. We are catalyst, champion, convener. So everything that we're doing, we're making sure that this is sort of a touchstone. And when we're assessing, what are we up to? What are we doing? Well, how does it fit with this vision of our organization? So I'm primarily here to touch on the two contracts that we're currently running with the city. So when they both fit within those three C's, we'll start with our economic development, testing the waters of economic development for the last year. Project 4MB was a one-year pilot program. It's been almost a full year. It was to implement activate sort of the council-adopted economic development strategic plan. Four, not to be cute, but it's because we have four economic centers in the community. To date, we've completed 10 business walks and engaged 52 business owners out in the field within each of those districts. 11 focus groups, engaging with about 57 business owners. Some had really high participation, and there were some months where we did not have very high participation. Business trainings and workshops, I have a slide dedicated to that, so we'll go into that. And I think the kind of tangible, deliverable, this low-hanging fruit concept for this first year was wayfinding signage. And we are on track. We wanted to ensure that we were engaging the business community, vetting sort of sign placement, sign content, and branding and identity in each of these centers. So we've worked with both Scott Graham and Jen Little with tourism to conceive of those, I guess, what should be on the signs, what they should look like, what the logo should be. Our business assistance workshops have covered the gamut, all geared toward sort of adding tools to business owners' toolboxes. It's not just let's get together and have a theoretical conversation. So let's talk about how to do a business plan. What are the best practices for your bookkeeping? The idea is to increase capacity in the private sector and to kind of give businesses, small businesses, the tools that they need to thrive. What did I do? Sorry. Thanks, AGP. I feel like if I just press, you docked my time. Just kidding.
Okay.
But yeah, so the workshops and the trainings have been done with some of our regional SBA-funded partners. And also what was called for in the EDSP that we're implementing or activating was to create this technical advisory collaborative, and our SBA-funded organizations are a part of that. We're almost there. You got it.
More.
Next one. Perfect. Oh, I got it from here. Thank you. So to date, we've engaged about 157 entrepreneurs and business operators. Not all of them are from Morro Bay. So over time, as we've been doing this, I've kind of come to realize that these are actually excellent opportunities to begin encouraging business owners and entrepreneurs who are starting their businesses and don't have a home yet to consider Morro Bay as their home. So it's almost a business recruitment tool for us. We Facebook live stream every workshop we do, and to date it's reached over 4,100 people, reach on Facebook. So it is, and it's also become sort of a library for us. So if you go to our website or our Facebook page, all of the trainings are there. We have done some problem solving along the way. Part of the partnership has been learning. So we found out from the city's business license technician that there was sort of this feeling of, thank you for the transaction, I don't know what to tell them their next steps should be. So as businesses are coming in and paying their business licenses, where do I go? How do I help them? So we created this sort of roadmap to success. So this is hanging out at the license window. We encourage people to just We're just a block away. Come on up, talk to the chamber. You can cover all of these different things. This is open for anyone. You don't have to be a chamber member. Just come and talk to us. We want to help you with finding employees, advertising your business, finding a space to operate, and staying informed. We advise all of the people that we're talking to sign up for Notify Me. If you're doing business in Morro Bay, it's a great way to stay in touch with your agendas and the things that you are considering for policies. The other contract we want to consider is the Visitor Center. We are, should say, sort of, we've been engaging in this process of envisioning its ideal state. And we've done some, you know, one of the C's is convening community leaders and influencers, and we've done that. So we've had some private sector business owners come together. We've engaged some city staff departments, some advisory board members. And we've kind of achieved a little bit of consensus with a small group around the statement that the role of the visitor center is to engage visitors with the many activities, businesses, and experiences that Morro Bay has to offer. We consider our employees in the visitor center as liaisons, both between the businesses and the visitor and the destination. They are kind of the glue. But the missing element to date really feels like it's engagement in the field. You know, we believe that we could do a better job getting out there, street teams communicating upcoming events to businesses, but no matter what, we'll kind of always need a home base that provides a sense of place and reception. So we're considering this metric of success to be sort of active engagement, and this is different from the way that we're currently measuring. I think they can be complementary, but all of these numbers are passive receipt of traffic. This isn't us out there engaging our visitors. This is waiting for our visitors to come and engage us. And we do a great job. You know, we have a very high level of customer service. We are serving inquiries. We're making suggestions. 1,382 people have come into our door, 798 calls, 17 emails, and some of our recommendations or sort of inquiries being served include, you know, directions and maps and events, people who are coming into town and saying, what do I do now? These are some events that are all free, actually, with the exception of Women Making Waves. This is all happening in June. Part of what the Hourglass Project, Melissa, had talked about with this coalition of chambers. We are now hosting the Business Symposium. That's happening in June. Our June mixer, many of the businesses down in Marina Square have collaborated. I think your business spot tonight is one of them. So we're excited about that one. Our last 4MB workshop in the pilot program is with retail. And we have another focus group. We're rounding out that round of, or that year pilot program in the Quintana District. Super excited about this. We're talking about diversifying our economy. We have a resource right in our own backyard. Part of that TAC team was including the high school. The high school has built a state-of-the-art, it looks like a wing of a junior college, STEAM arts and engineering building. It is unreal. So we have kind of asked some female leaders, again, in, you know, keeping in mind this landmark time that we're entering, to come in. These are leaders from female leaders in the fields of science, engineering, and technology. Alla Weinstein should seem familiar to all of us. She's with Castle Wind. She'll be delivering a keynote. Judy Mahan is a Morro Bay resident and the director of the Cal Poly Hot House. Dr. Joy Carter is the first African-American woman in the country to be appointed chief medical examiner, period, just 2 years ago, and she works right in our backyard. Laura Zagar is a she works nationally in energy and infrastructure law. And then Kathy Markov is just an exceptional facilitator with a really super exuberant presence, so we're really excited about her. So this is sort of an example of the kind of programming that the Chamber is really excited about. This is about catalyzing business growth. This is about inspiring future leadership. This is about growing a homegrown workforce. And then we're looking forward to collaborating with the Hourglass Project to say, you know, where's the funnel? We got the workforce. What are the jobs? You know, who's coming into our community? What do we want? What's our vision? So we're kind of all aligned. Avocado Margarita Festival fits in with the three C's. This is a championing of our community. This event in the last 3 years has raised $33,000 for Morro Bay-based nonprofits. So I just want to, you know, encourage our locals to come out and celebrate the bounty of the Greenbelt. This is a natural resource. This is a food and culinary and arts event. There are also adult beverages, but it's all good. And I'll just close with that because I know it's going to stay up. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you, Erica. Any questions for Erica? Great update.
All right.
Appreciate all the work that you and your staff are doing. Thank you so much. With that, I do have a business spot welcoming Shannon Casey from Rancho Olivos. Shannon, come on up and tell us a little bit about your business. Welcome.
How's that? Can you guys hear me?
Sure can.
All right. Thank you so much for having me, Mr. Mayor and council members. It's a pleasure to be here. My husband and I have had a small farming business since 2000 in Santa Ynez in Santa Barbara County, growing olives and making olive oil. And this past February, we opened a shop on the Embarcadero, our first brick-and-mortar shop. So we've been selling olive oil at our farm since 2006, and we sell it there and do some wholesale and have been online sales, but this is the first time we've had a retail shop. And it's a really fun neighborhood. We're on the Embarcadero, just under Windows on the Water. And I'm a food-obsessed person. So the shop is all about local products, local food. And so everything we have in there, with the exception of some Mediterranean olive wood things, is grown or sourced locally. Local raw honey, local jam, local almonds, the olive oil, of course. And so we want to continue that. We've had one event with a local coffee maker, and our plan is to have the occasional events with people in the community that also are making some kind of artisan food product. And yeah, that's what we do.
Your hours of operation?
So we're open daily from 11:30 to 5 during the week, and then on weekends we're open later till 6 or 7 o'clock, depending on the traffic. But this weekend was our first really busy weekend. We're still getting used to kind of, you know, what people are looking for and how long they're staying around. But being a holiday weekend, even though it did rain on and off on Sunday, which we weren't expecting, but there's still a lot of folks around, a lot of people in town, and everybody's really nice. I have to say all our neighbors and everybody we've met with the chamber and the local businesses have all been super friendly and very supportive and collaborative and encouraging. So
great. And phone number and website?
The website is RanchoOlivos.com, and the phone number is 818-426-2512.
Great, Shannon. Welcome to the community. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. With that, I will open up public comment. Members of the audience wishing to speak on items not on the agenda or items on the agenda for which you can't stay to speak regarding, feel free to come up now. I'll start with my speaker slips, and then I'll open it up again. First up is Linda Winters. Welcome, Linda.
For the shorter people. Good evening, Mayor and Council, and my name is Linda Winters, and I am a 25-year resident living in the same mobile home park for the last 25 years. And mobile home park living is the topic of my discussion for tonight and forevermore. On April 18th, there was a special city council meeting on the goals and objectives. It was the goals and objectives forum, which I couldn't attend, but I understand there were two goals mentioned that were pertinent to mobile home park living. Number one was affordable housing. In Morro Bay, we already have 485 mobile home spaces in place. We also have 500 RVs that are in permanent positions in our 15 mobile home parks that house approximately 1,000 plus residents that are living, working, and contributing and voting in our community. Morro Bay's rent control ordinance keeps these mobile home families affordable. Just think of what it would cost to build affordable housing for 500 plus families right now. Low income. we still need more housing, but we let's keep this segment safe. Number two goal was building better communications. And I proposed forming an information network amongst the residents of our 15 mobile home parks to educate these residents about their rights in mobile home living. These people, all 1,000 plus, are our workers, retired seniors on fixed incomes, low income and hardworking families with kids, contributing to Morro Bay's daily economy, shopping locally, volunteering time and energies, paying into their parks month to month, year after year, 1/10 of our city's population. They deserve representation in the city, don't they? I'm willing to work with representatives from each of these parks so we all have a voice in our local government. These are two very important goals we can all accomplish. There is also one more personal goal that I have and I hope to achieve. I intend on attending as many city council meetings as I can in the coming years. The council will see me, recognize me, and as I come up to the podium for public comment, Mayor Hedding will say, "Welcome, Linda Winters. What do you have to talk about with us tonight?" Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Appreciate you being here and appreciate you engaging with our community. Next up for public comment is Chloe Hartston. Hope I said that right, Chloe.
Yeah.
Welcome, Chloe.
Good evening, Council and Mayor. I am Chloe Hartston, a student at Los Osos Middle School, and in my leadership class, we are assigned a community service project, and mine is about the negative impacts of plastic on our planet. I created Clean the Coast when I became educated and aware of the impact of plastic on our planet. After this, I wanted to make a difference. Negative impacts of plastic on our planet. 8 million metric tons of plastic waste are dumped into the ocean each year. By 2050, there will be more plastic in the ocean than there are fish. Plastic impacts nearly 700 species, including humans. Marine life mistakes plastic as food, which in turn kills them. Some form of plastic is found in about 90% of sea turtles. Plastic never fully degrades and eventually breaks down into microplastics, which are another big problem. And 400,000 plastic straws are used in SLO County every single day. The problem with microplastics is that plastic never fully degrades and only turns into smaller pieces. Eventually, small organisms such as zooplankton end up eating them and die. Zooplankton are an essential part of the marine life food chain, and if too many zooplankton die out, it will be detrimental. Plastic is destructive and harmful to our planet and the beings that live on it. Beach cleanup. My first call to action was to do a beach cleanup. Beach cleanups are a simple yet productive thing to do for our Earth. Beach cleanups prevent unwanted plastic and waste from entering the ocean and helps keep our beaches clean. I took a group of people with me to Morro Bay, and we worked our way down the coastline while gathering a variety of plastic. What can we do to help? Buy a reusable water bottle, such as a Hydro Flask. Switch to paper bags instead of plastic at the grocery store. Buy reusable straws instead of single-use plastic straws, such as metal or glass. Reduce your purchases of prepackaged food if possible. Stop using Ziploc baggies and buy reusable Tupperware, such as glass. Are we currently doing anything to help plastic pollution? Certain organizations are currently working on biodegradable plastics made out of a plant called hemp. Traditional plastic is derived from cellulose and petroleum, while the new version would be derived straight from the plant source, hemp. This type of plastic will break down and go straight back into the earth, causing a lot less waste. We could make small, doable changes in our community that would make a difference in the quality of our planet and oceans. Let's make a difference. Thank you. And that concludes my presentation.
Chloe, you are a great example of a great leader in your school We love it when young people come out and engage in government. People are shaking their hands in the back for you right now. They're kind of, that's the way we clap here. And I just want to say thank you for coming out and educating us on this very important issue. And tell your teachers you deserve extra credit for this. Hopefully they can watch it on TV. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up is Mimi Goldberg. Mimi, welcome, Mimi.
Hi, my name is Mimi Goldberg, and I have resided in Morro Bay since 1989. Good evening to the City Council members, staff, and audience, and everyone who's watching on TV. If some of you know or don't know, my name is Mimi Susan Goldberg, and I first moved here in 1989. After graduating from California Conservation Corps, most outstanding, I was sent to the Sequoia Center and worked on the emergency earthquake in Hollister. I built gabions on the California Aqueduct in Coalinga, and after completing the Corps, I moved to Morro Bay. I studied biology with an emphasis on native plants and animals. I had a 3.12 GPA, and my mentor is Ron Rupert. He's head of the bio department at Cuesta. Two more classes, and I'll have my certificate of proficiency in environmental biology. I just wanted to speak about the bocce ball courts and ask some questions, like, is the greenhouse going to be open to the public, and is it going to be 24 hours a day? The house adjacent on Dune Street, is there going to be something so the balls don't hit their fence? And I also just wanted to bring up, please, we need trash cans down at the Rock. And I want to say thank you very much. I don't think we want bocce ball. Thank you. And you paved Paradise and put up a parking lot.
Thank you, Mimi. Appreciate you being here. Public comment is open for items either on the agenda that you can't stay for or items not on the agenda you'd like to speak about. Looking around, waiting, seeing no further comments, I will close public comment and ask that possibly we just address a question with regard to any of the bocce ball issues. Mr. Leivick, anything to say on the development of that? More information to come?
Probably more information to come. We're working with Morro Bay Seniors Incorporated, and perhaps Mr. Carmichael might have some details on the operational effects. The house on Dune Street is actually property owned by the city and currently unoccupied, and that fence is the city's fence.
Okay. Kirk?
Yeah, Kirk Carmichael, Recreation Manager. At this time, we're in formative discussions regarding hours of operation with the greenhouse, but pretty much that's a Morro Bay in Bloom structure that we're allowing placement there to where they can go ahead and I'll use the term propagate. I hope I got that right. It's been a long time since I've been in biology, Mimi. Propagate the plants there and then place them around the city to help beautify the town. So no, the plan is not to have that open to the public. And then other questions. What else did she have, Mr. Mayor? I'm sorry, there was a...
Just a general information on where we are about it being open to the public, protection issues with regard to, and I think Mr. Leivick addressed that.
Yeah, the protection as far as balls being thrown, it's a roll the ball on the ground. It's not like play catch, so they shouldn't be a problem with them going over the fence or anything like that.
Okay. Great. Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir. Yeah. Appreciate that. With that, I'll bring it back and move to item A on the agenda, the consent agenda. Anybody wishing to speak from the public on consent items, please come forward now. I'll open it up for public comment. Looking around. Seeing no members, I will close public comment, bring it back, either look for a motion for approval and or any items to pull from council.
I'd like to pull item A4.
A4, got it.
I would also. pull A4. So.
A4 times 2? Any others? Entertain a motion to approve all items on consent besides A4?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Davis, seconded by Councilmember McPherson to approve all consent items except for item A4. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
And item A4, Councilmember Heller, and then Councilmember McPherson.
A4, I'm sorry I missed the last meeting where this was discussed in greater detail, but obviously the sewer project is a huge deal in this town. I think there's probably not a more important report that the elected officials sitting here and future elected officials will review than the monthly WRF project report that we'll be looking at every month. It's a report that, in my mind, the elected officials will be making key decisions based upon the report, and the public will want to understand the report as well. In looking through the draft report here, I don't think it's ready to be received, frankly. I'm curious about the interaction between the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee and staff with respect to their comments. It says here in this staff report that it was presented and reviewed by the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee. I've had multiple phone calls from well-respected members of that committee who are not happy with this report. So I'm wondering if someone on staff can comment about how those CFAC comments were written down and answered by staff and consultants to come up with this report.
Okay.
And one more thing. Mm-hmm. It says here, suggestions that improve reporting without creating an undue burden on staff will be incorporated into future reports. Someone needs to explain to me what that means. This is a $126 million project. A very solid Citizens Finance Advisory Committee members are not happy with the report. And it seems to read like we're not making any changes because it's too much of a burden on us to do so. This is completely unacceptable to me. I have a lot of comments here. I'm not going to take a lot of time tonight with the details of it, but I find the report completely unacceptable.
I'll take the first or the second question. City Council approved this report last meeting, so if there is problems with the report, then it would need to come back to council. If the majority of council would like to see changes in those reports, we certainly can make those. I'll leave it to Rob to answer the first part.
This report was presented at the CFAC meeting, and it's based on, as Mr. Collins just stated, recommendations from council for its format. This is the shorter version of the report, and every quarter a longer version of the report will be published. CFAC members did request two additional tables between the time of their review and publication in the council agenda. There really was enough time to put those tables in. Plus, council did make a decision on what the report format would be. And as we stated at the CFAC meeting, we would need the direction from council to make any of the significant changes that were requested.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes. Well, I pulled this item because I wanted to address that issue of what constituted a change, a minor change. And I attended the CFAC meeting as the council liaison, and my feeling about it was that there was one person in particular who was unhappy with the report, but that by and large the other members were not. So I think, as I said, we've already approved the format. One of the the one suggestion was to add two additional tables, and I wanted to confer with our program manager and make sure that that would not present an undue burden, which it would not, because it is something that they already are gathering. So adding the two tables would not be an undue burden. The other suggestion that was made, which I thought was a good one, was that we actually truncated the two charts so that we showed on the timeline really from the beginning of this current project, which was in September 2017, when the council actually approved both the site for the project, the recycling component, and the advanced treatment. And just truncate that timeline so that we could see how much money was spent before that, which is a small amount, and what it was spent for, but that moving forward, this is the project we're looking at and we're keeping track of with the schedule. And again, I was told that that would not be a serious change to the report. So I'm ready to move that we receive this report as is.
I'll second that.
Okay, motion to approve item A4 and by Councilmember McPherson, second by Councilmember Addis. And any further comments? Councilmember Davis?
Yes, I watched the CFAC meeting on YouTube, and I guess I would like to know, what is the purpose of CFAC's review of this document? I did not get a good picture from the CFAC members as to what they were looking for or what kind of recommendation they wanted to make to council. So I don't know exactly how to proceed with that question, since it's not an agendized item. I just would like to raise that question. What is it that we expect CFAC to do with this report, and how does that add value to the council to have it go through CFAC?
Thank you. Appreciate that. You may recall, and I don't have the meeting date, a number of meetings ago, we sanctioned CFAC having a specific purpose and responsibility that was defined by council. I don't have the wording for that, so I'm not going to suppose what that was, other than realizing that the WRFCAC committee did not have significant resources to review the financial acumen or financial pieces of the WRF project on an ongoing basis, that should occur at CFAC, is my recollection. The liaison, the council member McPherson, went to the meeting after the council meeting, presented that information. It was very clear. I attended that meeting, as I did attend the last meeting. So their charter, in my opinion, was clear, stated from the council meeting and the minutes that were taken with regard to that. And at the last meeting, my recollection is the same as yours, Councilmember McPherson, again, being there and watching the interaction. There may have been those with a couple of questions with regarding the issue and added inputs with regard to possibilities for changing the report in the future. But this report is a report that has already been through council, been approved by council, and is here tonight presented as information for approval. So with that, we do have a motion and a second. And unless there's any other discussion, I will call for a roll call vote.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
No.
Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-1.
Great. Okay, that takes care of our consent agenda. That moves us to our business items. Did you still want to move C2 to C1? Okay, if with concurrence of council, I'd like to move item C2 up as the first business item and move C1 to the second place in order to allow our presenters to get in and get out. I believe they have another engagement. So if I see heads nod, is that okay? We will go ahead and start with item C2, the one-year partnership agreement with Project Surf Camp. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Collins and our esteemed guests as well that are here this evening. once we get our audio visuals in place. Collins, you want to introduce?
Yeah, sorry. Getting this all set up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor, Council members. Presenting item C2, which is the partnership agreement with Project Surf Camp. The recommendation is to authorize the city manager to execute a one-year partnership agreement with Project Surf Camp in a form approved by the city attorney. Just for background purposes, Project Surf Camp has been operating under a two-year partnership agreement with the city. Expiring on June 30th, 2019. They're seeking an extension. The partnership agreement provides for a fee waiver and other city support for Project Surf Camp. Prior to the agreement being in place, the city provided fee waiver and other support on an informal basis beginning in 2012. The fee waiver is worth approximately $13,500 in value. The fees are storage facilities being placed on city right-of-way and then park usage fees being waived. The partnership agreement policy was created and adopted by council in 2016 and currently applies to, I believe, just two or three entities at this time. By way of background, Project Surf Camp provides a unique service to special needs individuals in a very inclusive environment. They do have a small paid staff size and then largely volunteer supported. Currently, their cost structure is $70 per camper per day, and that covers about 25% of their expenses. The rest are made up through donations and in-kind services. We do have two representatives from Project Surf Camp here who will present on their mission at part of a separate part of this PowerPoint. But generally, the discussion is City Council will be reviewing the partnership agreement policy in general, which was originated in 2016 as part of the comprehensive fee update this year. Revisions to that policy and potentially new related policies will be put in place, we anticipate, later this year. So with that in mind, in order to maintain consistency and fairness moving forward, we recommend a one-year agreement with Project Surf Camp. The new year one agreement would mirror the benefits they currently receive through the two-year agreement. So with that, I will turn it over to, is it John? John, you're going to speak. John Taylor, who helps run Project Surf Camp, along with some of you might recognize Matt Makowetsky, and we'll let you take it from here.
Welcome, John.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council, City staff. These presentations are getting easier. As I come up here, I see a lot of staff, a lot of people that have supported in a number of different, in wetsuits, hanging out, coming out and being with the campers, helping raise money, helping with cooking hot dogs, just a number of things that really show that how much Project Surf Camp is community. Last year, because of the support of the city of Morro Bay, we had close to 300 campers and over 450 volunteers come out and participate in camp. We drew from, I think, 33 different communities around California and outside of California, both for campers and volunteers. Our breakdown is about half and half, serving the local community and then those from out of the area. But only so many words can really express what Project Surf Camp's all about. Hopefully we have volume. going, and it's really good.
We know.
It's got the world. That's all right. You know, we can't do this without the city. And we're extremely thankful for the last 2 years of being able to partner with this city. This program is very much a community-based organization. And yes, we have a small staff, but it does not exist without the support of the community. We offer a service that is pretty unique. To provide adaptive programming, there are a number of great organizations out there. There's a number of great groups that have adaptive programming for individuals with special needs. But what we open it up to is not only that those individuals with special needs, but their families. And to have that family opportunity to be able to go out and recreate and enjoy this beautiful area that we live in is very unique. To be able to provide programming for those families, for those campers, for those families, is something pretty special. We have part of our staff is what really kind of sets us apart is we have specialists on staff to be able to work with the intricacies of the varying disabilities, and we really don't advertise. It's a matter of me posting the schedule, or we posting the schedule, and we fill up every year. And we're only restricted by the number of days that we facilitate the camp. And we're going to be going for about 5 weeks this summer. So as you guys discuss the agreement, we are very thankful for what we've had in the past. Hopefully our partnership will continue for years to come. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Who's the guy in red? Is he going to say anything? No, he's just sitting in the audience. Okay. He does. Okay. Appreciate it, John. Thank you. With that, Mr. Collins, any closing comments? Or?
No, just be happy to take any questions, or they can answer questions.
Absolutely.
About the program.
Yeah. So I'll open it up for questions unless anybody would like to make a motion.
I'd be happy to make a motion.
Okay.
I will move that City Council authorized the city manager to execute a one-year partnership agreement with Project Surf Camp in a form approved by the city attorney.
Second.
So we have a motion for a staff recommendation by Councilmember Addis and a second by Councilmember Davis. Before discussion, I will open a public comment. Any members of the public wishing to come forward on item C2, please do so now. Welcome, Bob.
I'm here again. Mayor, council members, staff, Morro Bay citizens. This is one of my favorite projects to volunteer. I got involved when it was halfway, I think it's 13 years now, John?
14?
Anyway, I came halfway aboard. And I can remember, I really enjoyed it. My son one time called me and said, "Hey, Dad, it happens on my birthday." He says, "What do you want to do for your birthday?" He said, you want to know what I'm going to do for my birthday, son? How about Project Surf Camp, because you're a surfer and you're getting a wetsuit." So he said, "Only if I get a wetsuit with him." So now, after 80, I don't get in wetsuits. But anyway, this is a great project, and it'll make everybody's day. I guarantee it.
Thank you, Bob. Public comment is still open. Any members of the public wishing to come forward, do so now. Seeing none, I will close public comment, bring it back, and we have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
I just want to say it's just a fantastic project that you guys have going, and I walk by it occasionally when it's in progress, and it's good stuff, very good stuff. Thanks for your work.
I, too, wanted to thank you, John and Matt. John, for your leadership and your group, I really appreciate it. Not only does it serve the needs of young people, but also young people that have needs that may not get to experience ocean experiences like this. It helps us as a community open up our arms to those that really deserve to be on the coast and enjoy the services that you guys provide. So I very much support the motion and the recommendation, and just wanted to offer you my personal thanks and my personal commitment to financially contribute again this year because of the great work that you do. And so, if there are not any other comments?
I have a comment.
Yes, yeah. Councilmember Ed.
Well, I think John and I met before Project Surf Camp, and I remember watching you start it and was just very impressed over the years seeing it grown and the way it's become part of the fabric of Morro Bay. So it's really an honor to be able to be part of a council that supports the project, and thank you for what you do.
Great. That roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Great. Thank you again for being here, gentlemen. Appreciate it. That takes us back to item C1. This is consideration of Morro Bay Tourism, or TBID, annual report and continuation of the assessment for fiscal year 2019-20 and adoption of Resolution 4119, declaring the intent to continue the program and levy assessments for the fiscal year 19-20 and scheduling a public hearing to levy the assessments. With that, I'll welcome up Jen Little, or Mr. Yes. Collins will open it up, and then you can introduce Ms. Little. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mayor. Council, I'll introduce the item and then kick it over to Jen in a few minutes. But basically, this item is about the reassessment of the Tourism Business Improvement District. It's on an annual basis for our TBID. What that includes is specific specifications that we have to satisfy in order to be in accordance with the roads and highways code section of the state that applies to T-bids or bids in general. So with that in mind, what we're looking for is approval to proceed into the public hearing process for the reassessment process. As part of that, you know, we're looking at what the annual assessment is. We are recommending it still be at 3% for hotels and motels for fiscal year 19-20. In total, that will generate about $825,000 for revenues to be used to promote tourism specifically. Those assessment revenues, along with the estimated city general fund contribution of $60,000 plus nominal amount for advertising revenue, would net us almost $900,000 for next year. And generally, as Council is aware, the purpose of the TBID is really to promote Morro Bay as a tourist destination locally, regionally, nationally, and then with our partners internationally. That chapter that for the municipal code that relates to the TBID has specifically authorized uses of those funds to promote tourism within the district, for marketing of conference group and film businesses, and then marketing the district as a travel industry. So that just gives you kind of a broad overview. In the TBID assessment process, the TBID must be reassessed annually, again, through a public hearing process governed by California Streets and Highways Code Section 36533, which is spelled out in more detail in the staff report. The TBID Advisory Board did review this during their May meeting and approved the annual report for the assessment, which also includes the draft budget for fiscal year 19-20, and it answers the following questions. Any proposed changes to the boundary, no changes being proposed. The improvements and activities to be provided next fiscal year, which are spelled out in our budget. The cost to do that, again, in our budget. The method and basis of levying that assessment, again, through the hotels and motels overnight stays. Any surplus or deficit to be carried forward, there is none being estimated for that. And then any other sources of contribution, that includes our general fund and marketing revenues. So with that, I will turn it over to Jen to kind of highlight the budget, and we can answer any questions that council may have.
Good evening, council, mayor, city staff.
Do you want to?
Okay. So this is, you saw the budget before, and we've refined it with the new update of the general fund allocation of $60,000. And what we've changed in this is moving those general funds into the digital media versus having it in the grant section. And the reason for that was to really look at the idea of using the general fund dollars for broad thought on the destination, not just targeting one-day events. So I think it's better use of the city dollars instead of just targeting specific events. And then the grant money will be funded through TBID. So that's the first part of it. Other notable things in the budget, it includes the $31,392 expense, which is the 2% administrative charge that includes administrative support and IT. The city does not charge for the direct overhead support of the city manager, finance staff, human resources, or other general event support like we saw at Amgen. The 2% administrative charge is based on an assessment received that helps offset the support. Some of the other notable items are there is the 2% COLA that was previously negotiated. Currently, the staffing in the tourism office is one full-time staff, that's me, and two part-time staff members. And for 1920, we are assuming the same staffing levels. The total for that category is $219,000. The only change that would happen in that is if we brought in VRs and we looked at a budget change, we would come back and look at changing how the staffing looks on that as well. Going through some of the larger line items in the budget, I can go through these, and if you want to ask me questions, we can dig into a little bit if you want, but there's just some pretty larger numbers that we put together. So under consulting, we have an SEO contract that's a monthly contract, and we also have design services under there for $11,600. We have our general contract services, which is all of the mental marketing contract for their planning, management, creative, public relations, and their placement fee that we negotiated down to 12% in our new contract. We have promotional advertising, which is the printing of the visitor guide. We have assumed $12,000 for that, but we're hoping it'll come in lower. Print ads, we have funded for one print ad. We usually don't do any print advertising. This would be strictly to support bringing in group sports-centric activities. So we're looking at events that don't use arenas, that don't use facilities, that use the bay and use the beach, and things that are more geared towards where our strategic plan is really keeping us focused. Community event support, we're putting $50,000 of TBID dollars into that category. The promotional medium line item is our passports that we do. It also has two calendars that we support. One is the Cal Poly incoming freshman's calendar that sits in their dorm rooms, and the other one is a exclusive, the Morro Bay calendar that's going to be sold to all retailers that would like to carry it this year, which is kind of an exciting thing. And it'll list all of our events and activities for the year. Promotional other category is kind of a line of item of lots of different things. We have our yearly wine promotion that we do. We have a few utility bill inserts, banners, and different promotional materials, and a new canopy for the tourism office. That's $13,000. Advertising sponsorship, that's the co-op dollars that we use for either Visit California, CCTC, which is the Central Coast Tourism Council, or SloCal. We have $13,000 in there. SloCal had asked for $30,000 just for them, and we'd never do that much money in a co-op, but we do have some money in there, and we'll just assess them as they come in and see where we want to put those. Professional development, I held a little money, but we usually don't use that in there. The digital media we have at $272,000. This is one of the things that I have told my board that if we do have an increase at mid-year or if there's any carryover, this is an area that I would like to add money to and get it up to $295,000. But right now in the budget, it's sitting at $272,000. And that is also where we're putting the general fund, $60,000. Out-of-home media, this is the outdoor board on Highway 1. That's the yearly rental, $6,600. We have our digital service category, which is our Jackrabbit and SimpleView contract. It runs $45,000. Digital assets is zero, but we'd like to have $8,000 in there, but right now we don't, so we'll have to see how we do it mid-year carryover. Visiting journalists is at $10,000. Let me just make sure that's right. Is that right, Scott?
Yeah, I think so. You wanted it to be 20.
Yeah, it is at $10,000. We would like to get up higher at $20,000, but what we talked about with the board is really going back to the hotels and restaurant and retailers and telling them our budget is really tight this year, and we need them to come forward with putting money into that as far as free offers or discounted rates, and we'll just see who comes to the table with that. Travel trade is the two shows that we do yearly that goes out after foreign independent travelers. Those are people that are kind of replacing the bus market. They come down in vans, usually 4 to 8 people, and they stay for multiple days. So they're a really nice target market, and we're starting to see some traction. These shows book 2 years out. So we're just now starting to see bookings from doing this 2.5 years ago, which is really interesting. We just booked, on a sidebar, we just booked it's 50 people for 3-night stay from Minnesota. And they're coming only to Morro Bay. So that was kind of cool. I mean, that we're getting that type of traction and that they're looking to just come to Morro Bay. I was really excited. Usually we're one of the 3 places they stay overnight. So I love that. VRs and RVs, yes, we are still talking about this. We did our first outreach last week, and we have another one this next week, open to the public if anybody would like to come. And that'll go back to the TBID in September to look at it and then come to City Council for your review. I think that's all I have for budget. Do you want to go? You want questions or?
Thank you, Jen. Yeah. Back to this. The recommendation is to approve the 1920 annual report for expenditure of funds and the adoption of Resolution 4019, which declares the intent to continue the program and levy assessments for fiscal year 1920 and scheduling a public hearing to levy such assessments at the next council meeting.
Great.
Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you both for the presentation. I'll open it up for council questions. Looking left or right? Marlis?
Well, thank you very much, Jen, and I appreciate I sent a list of quite a few questions to her ahead of time, and she was good enough to get them the responses to me, so I will not ask all of them, but just a couple of clarifying questions that I think maybe the public might be interested in as well. First of all, I was curious about the boundaries, which I know are written in the legislation, and I know Chris looked at that. And I assumed that it was geographical boundaries, but I'm wondering what kind of a process we would have to go through if we wanted to add the RV parks and the vacation rentals. So do we have to change something or maybe you could just explain legally what we would need to do that.
Sure. So the original TBID was established for the geographical boundaries for the entire city, but the businesses that are subject to the assessment are specifically hotels, and the definition that was approved specifically excludes RVs and vacation rentals. So if we were to add new entities to the business definition, we would need to go ahead and have a public hearing where there was an opportunity for both the proposed new businesses and the existing businesses to do another vote on whether to be part of the new TBID. So the geographical boundaries would stay the same, but within those boundaries, there would be new businesses added to the assessment levies.
Okay, thank you. And I noticed that you did reduce the amount that you're going to give to events, and I'm just curious to know, I know you're going to be looking at that. Do you want to just fill us in on what your group or the TBID, I think you have a subcommittee that is looking at specifically events, and you're probably going to modify who you're giving to, and could you share that with us?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. We actually met last week. We have a really great group, really broad spectrum of people that sit on that group. And what we ended up doing was we broke down by dollar increments on how people should be funded on varying different things. So if it's a 1-day, 2-day, or 3-day event, they get, and it doesn't mean they're actually going to get the dollars, but what we'd value that at. And we put in a dollar amount. We have whether it's a profit or a nonprofit. So a profit gets $0, a nonprofit would get $500. Whether it's an alcohol event or a non-alcohol event, same thing. So those type of things, we did length of age of event. We did whether there's a gate fee or an entrance participation fee or not. Whether it's Morro Bay theme focused. Total visitors that come to the events, and we actually rated those. We looked at new or growing groups. We wanted to give them a value, so we did like 300 to 1,000 people. We gave them a value, and if they got over 10,000 people, we lowered that back down because we're small. We only have 900 rooms, so there's a point where we can't take too big of an event. We looked at total years funding for through TBID, and whether they hired a professional event planner. So we put all those into a spreadsheet, and we came up with a really nice idea, and then we'll take those to TBID, and we'll give them our recommendation, and we'll see. We'll also ask what the groups are looking for financially, and we'll see where they come out.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
And the last question, I was curious about the budget that you presented, and I noticed that there seemed to have been a deficit at the end of the last, or you're projecting one for the end of this fiscal year, but on this fiscal year or the last one, but when you explained it to me, it was because there was monies left over and it was transferred to the accumulation fund, and I just wanted to clarify that for the public, if you could explain that. That you didn't really run a deficit.
No, definitely.
Right.
Maybe I can take that one.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Phone a friend here. The TBID fund 007 had a fund balance in there. The accumulation fund had never been established. So we set up an accumulation fund and transferred that fund balance into that for the savings account, if you will. So what that shows is revenues over expenditures because of that transfer, but it's not a deficit since it was just transferring the fund balance.
Yeah, it shows as an intra-fund transfer, but it made it look like they were running a deficit. I just wanted to clarify for the public. So thank you very much. Those are my questions.
Great. Thank you. Other council member questions? Council member Davis, lecture.
Yes. Jennifer, you mentioned that there will be one more outreach session this week for RV and VR. Can you tell us when and where?
That's here at the Vet Center on the 30th, 5 p.m. I'll bring cookies and coffee if you want to come. And we're doing it different. It's round tables, so we're sitting in different groups. TBID is not there sitting in the dais. It's very much about the owners coming out and really trying to brainstorm on what would work best for them and giving us thoughts on good and bad.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Looking to my left or right. Any questions, Tom?
No. Questions? I'll make a motion.
Well, I have a couple questions. Yeah,
okay.
Thanks.
Sorry.
Thanks, Jim. Hey, thank you for the report. Yeah, I was going to go last. Just a couple questions. Thanks for your presentation, Jen. I appreciate it. Can you tell me, with regard to the destination marketing strategic plan, where we are in the implementation process?
We're pretty far. I'm really happy with how it's going. We've got the new website up. It's been running for just 30 days. And that was a big component of the strategic plan, was to really reposition ourselves with a stronger website. And to give you an idea, for the first month it was up, we're up 18% in total unique visitors on that website, which is really strong. We've got a lot of little 15-second videos that we've created that are running on social media. Those are getting really good reach. Those are all about outdoor activity and the National Estuary. They're absolutely beautiful. If you haven't seen them, check them out, or I can send you links to them. And it's going really well. I'm very happy with it. Yeah.
Okay. And the other question I had is just looking at average daily rates for Morro Bay versus other communities. This is SoCal data.
Yeah.
And I know you know what I'm going to say, but, you know, Morro Bay is at 122, Paso's at 137, and, of course, Pismo's at 177. Does the TBID have a specific strategy that they're thinking about to address the issue of bringing the ADR up? Because if they do, it would be in conflict with the destination marketing plan, which really suggested that we should be the low-cost leader and try to market as a low-cost leader. So I'm wondering, those seem to be diametrically opposed, where the TBID board is landing and what your thoughts are on that.
So the idea of being the low-cost leader doesn't mean we have to be cheap and, you know, low level. It just means when you're looking at a waterfront hotel, we are the lowest in a waterfront hotel or waterfront town. So it doesn't mean that it has to be super low. So keep that in mind. I mean, everybody has a budget. Ours are obviously going to be lower than a Pismo Beach that has, you know, brand new 100-room on the water hotels. What we're doing is we've been really going after the idea of boutique waterfront, and we really can own that thought now. Pismo has gotten very, very large. Even Avila Beach has. They've got some very large hotels there as well, where all of our waterfront properties are under 10 rooms. And they're quality. They're beautiful quality rooms. And so going after that idea that this is the place you go on the Central Coast for boutique hotel rooms to get away from the crowds and the chaos, it's Morro Bay. And that fits really well with who we are. As far as ADR, I think we're going to see it move up a little bit just with implementing our strategic plan. One of the things that we're doing that's it's a minor thing, but I think we will see good quality change on it, is showing how close all of our hotels are to the water. So even if you're in downtown, I mean, you're like 3-4 blocks from the water. I mean, that's really strong. And the way all the photos have been shot of the hotels, it just looks like a hotel in any town. So we're going back through and we're reshooting all those hotels, showing that they are close to the rock or close to the Embarcadero, and really showing the environment of our town more than just it's a building somewhere.
Okay, thanks. With that, I'll open it up for public comment. The members of the public wishing to address item C1, please come forward now. Looking around, scanning, seeing nobody, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council, looking for a recommendation.
I would move that we approve the fiscal year 2019/20 annual report for expenditure funds to be derived from the annual assessment and continue the 3% TBID assessment in FY 2019-20.
Second.
We have a motion for a staff report by Councilmember Davis, second by Councilmember McPherson. Any further discussion on that? If not, roll call vote.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Great. Thank you. That brings us to agenda item C-2. Options to enhance communication and engagement with the community, and I'll turn it over to our esteemed, what did I say, C3? I'm sorry, C3 is what I meant. Yeah.
Happy to introduce this item. I didn't know if Councilmember Heller wanted to offer some words after the presentation or to lead it off around community engagement and communications.
Well, I'm never at a loss for words, so I might as well take it all I can. I'm really happy that this has become a goal for the city this year, and the outreach that's being done already by the council members and city staff is already remarkable and head and shoulders above most cities. And my vision is, because we're a small town, I'd like to even build on that. I think there's enormous resources out there in the community that are still untapped. There's still large groups that kind of feel disenfranchised or out of the loop, as Ms. Winters discussed, in mobile home parks. So for me, to really make this the best place it can be, it's a great place now, but to make it even better, this piece is very important to me to build on it, and I appreciate the support from city staff and the council in making this an important goal.
Okay. Thank you, Councilmember Heller. With that, I'll just jump right into it when it gets... There we go. Get set up again. Thank you. So just quickly, we'll talk about the council direction that was provided under future agendas item many meetings ago. Go over our current communication engagement efforts, talk about new efforts that are currently under development, and options for additional communication engagements and next steps. So council direction was provided in January. We were directed to come back with options to consider for the purpose of improving communication engagement with the community. And just for tonight, you know, these might not be everybody's definition, but just as a way to kind of help frame some of the thinking. Communication here is just considered kind of one way with the city sharing information back out to the public, and then engagement is more of a two-way interactive exchange, whether it's one-to-one or in a group setting, allowing for input in both directions, from city to community and community back to city representatives. So under that communication definition, currently we do quite a bit. Obviously our websites, the city website, tourism website, and the water reclamation facility has its own website. We launched a city manager newsletter in 2017, or kind of revamped it from its previous iterations. We do inserts in the utility bill. We've done mailers in the past for specific issues. We launched OpenGov last year, which is a financial transparency portal that allows people to really dig in deep on our finances. We do e-notifications for those who sign up on our website for city news, meetings, and other important happenings. We do have a pretty good presence on social media, whether that's our tourism, police department, city generally, fire department. And we do press releases on occasion and to help get stories out, but also respond to media inquiries from local media. In terms of engagement, we do have city meetings, you know, whether it's council or all the advisory committees and bodies. We have forums held on specific issues. We've launched the new POLCO app, which allows for engagement on just getting community input on particular issues. We do emails back and forth with community members, host individual and group meetings, phone calls with community members, definitely an engaging effort there. Participate in the MB4 business walks and business forums to engage with our business community. Certain council members hold office hours, and staff has held office hours in the past on particular issues. And I threw this one in here. I hadn't thought about it, but we do have the community emergency response team, which is known as CERT, which helps prepare volunteers to help us if and when an emergency hits our community. And that's a really good engagement effort because those folks have networks out in the community to explain what's going on in the city. And there's some new efforts that are in development. Some will be launching here pretty soon. The police chief is putting together a police academy. We'll be launching the chief's advisory committee soon. Just went through interviews last week, and later this year we'll be rolling out a neighborhood cop program which really tries to get our police officers out into the neighborhoods to get to know our community members and sort of be in charge of districts, if you will. Instead of having specialized services, you really have a person you get to know who you go to when there's issues or nagging nuisance issues or whatever the case may be that aren't going away, and really problem solving together. We're also launching a new city online app. I believe it's sort of being tested right now, and we'll officially go live pretty soon. Those are really to report issues like potholes via a smartphone application. And then some of the options that we put together, Councilmember Heller was really, really helpful in brainstorming some of these, but this captures most of them, but of course there are more options that we can think of. But the first one is a city hall to you, where you bring kind of the city apparatus out into the community. You have representatives from each department, so people have questions about permitting process, how code enforcement works, you know, how police patrols the city, you know, basically any kind of issue where they may run into a council member or one staffer out in the community, but can't get all the answers and those interactions, and there's delays in getting back to them. This is an opportunity for kind of a one-stop shop for any question you may have, and there's also opportunities to present on important issues. There's a discussion about maybe hosting a neighborhood block party or being in partnership with community groups that want to host neighborhood block parties. That allows for interactions in a more informal basis to really get to know community members. Citizen Academy, kind of jumping off of what the chief's launching with the police academy, but this would be broader to the entire city. And some cities use this to not only help educate community members, but develop pipelines to leadership opportunities, if you will, in the city, whether it's commissions or even council members. Information kiosks, there's been some suggestions around that just to help broadcast what's going on in the city. At a very high level, because maybe folks don't traffic our websites or aren't on social media or don't read the news, this may help inspire them to look into what's going on in the city or on hot topics. City council members could agree to host routine office hours, and we may be able to help facilitate that at City Hall. We did talk about this last year, and we never pulled the trigger on it, to do a professional assessment of our communication engagement efforts. The City Council could hold a subcommittee on communication outreach just to do regular check-ins with staff, but certainly opportunities to train staff on engaging the community. We could have more ad hoc committees. We have run a few of those, like the Blue Ribbon Committee, or the current harbor lease management policy ad hoc group, and could revise the city manager to provide city manager updates to city council to have more routinized FAQs or whatever the case may be, that you know that's becomes part of the regular council meetings. So those are just some of the ideas to kick around. I took a swing at kind of these major options and understanding what I perceive to be what the level of effort would be to make those occur and maybe some of the costs that go along with those. I don't think I'll go through these in detail, but it just gives you an idea of what it might take to make them work. Obviously, this is an important goal for City Council. It's kind of tied for second place with all the other goals right behind fiscal and economic sustainability, so we're very sensitive to that. But we do want to recognize that, you know, we do a lot of this already, as Councilmember Heller mentioned, and anything added on will be a burden. But, you know, we're definitely open to considering the ones that City Council wants us to focus on, and we can develop those a little bit more and bring them back if that's the desire of Council. Certainly can look at a few of these and just want to be cognizant of impacts on staff and costs. So with that, I will turn it over to Council if you have any questions of staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Jeff, for agendizing this and bringing it forward. I'll open it up to questions for council members that may have questions with regard to this. Looking left. Yes, Dawn, go ahead and start.
How would the office hours be different from what you do now? Like, people can already make an appointment with you?
Yeah, I was thinking if council members wanted to utilize the City Hall, we could create like a schedule for
us, yes, to have office hours, yeah, at City,
yes,
Hall.
Okay, I mean, thank of course, you. Staff, we're always available. I know, and council members are always available, but this just as a way to sort of formalize that. It's just a brainstorming thing, but we offer ourselves up at any time, of course, what our schedules allow. But we did have formalized office hours during the Prop 218 process to allow for more deep engagement on people's bills or what their bills may be if it passed. And that was really important. Sometimes those conversations take more than 5 minutes and it can't transpire out, you know, in the lobby. Yeah.
And then on the kiosks, how is that different from using what we already have? Like, we have the visitor center, City Hall. I assume we share information at the community center, at the library. So is it just a new location for more information? Or?
Yeah, I think this would be the signs we have at the Highway 41 entrance and then coming to the visitor center, I think, are specific to community events or special events. But this may be more broadly, like maybe big city council issues. I mean, we have to think about how many words you can get on a kiosk so that it's still visible to drivers and not cause them to swerve into things. But and strategically locating them, you know, in high trafficked areas. But I think that's more of the intention of this option.
Yeah. Good. Questions, though? Marlis?
Well, I had several that I asked Scott ahead of time, and he was kind enough to give me answers, but I'm going to ask some of them just so that the public is aware of what some of the answers. How many people are currently signed up with POLCO?
Don't have the answer since we don't host that information. It's hosted by POLCO's platform.
Right.
But based on the number of responses, there's probably at least 150 and maybe more.
Okay.
That are currently signed up.
We
and
don't
I'm
know for sure.
Engaging with their representative to see what we can do to
right.
boost that number. It's a great start, but I'm sure we can do more to
yeah,
get that one out.
And really my questions get at, you know, I know it would be nice if we could hire somebody to evaluate the effectiveness of all of these alternatives, but I think that's outside of the bounds of what we can afford. So I was just trying to get at some questions that would help us to understand better which ones of these are used more by citizens. So do we know how many people access the city's website and the WRF website and the tourism website? I assume we know that one.
Yeah.
But I know there are mechanisms for monitoring that, and that's why I was asking. And
yeah, I mean, we based on my understanding of city websites in the past, I would say the numbers is multiple thousands of clicks on a monthly basis. It could be tens of thousands. I don't want to say what that is without looking at kind
right.
of the analytics.
Right.
Our previous deputy city manager position was sort of in charge of monitoring the analytics, so I'll have to re-engage part of my brain that I haven't used in a while to figure out how to do that, and I can get a number back to you. But I would say it's in the several thousands. The tourism website is brand new, and it's already boosted 18% compared to last year. And
275,000 a year, roughly.
How many?
275,000
visits
a year.
Okay.
And we expect that number to grow. The wharf webpage, we know there's a couple hundred that are signed up for notification via that website. The actual number of visits, I'll have to get back to you on that. We do know we have 13,000 followers on the city Facebook page. You can expect half of those are not residents from Morro Bay. Just, you know, it's pretty pictures and people love sea otters. So we do have a lot of drive-by Facebook users, if you will. But maybe half of those are either residents or nearby residents. And engagement's about 30,000 a month, which is pretty good, actually, for Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I know Chief uses the Twitter account, and so does Chief Knuckles, and then Chief Cox uses Facebook, and they have a really good following as well, and they put out useful information about emergencies and fires and things like that. And it gets a good response. So I don't know if that answers your question. I'd love to have more information to provide you. But like I said, we get pretty good utilization of most of our media.
Okay. And how about advisory boards? Just talk a little bit about what the costs associated with staffing the advisory boards and having them run the meetings. And then do we have any sense of how many people actually attend and or watch the advisory board meetings?
We did... Based on when the questions came in, we did the best we could. But
all you can do.
Yeah, I know we looked at PWAB, and the average number of viewers on YouTube post-meeting was about 25 per meeting. We don't know how many are viewing it live because that would require Nielsen ratings, and that's cost prohibitive to engage them on that for public access. And I don't even know if they do it for public access. They might. The question about number of attendees, typically there's like probably 5 to 10, sometimes more. Certainly things like WharfCAC can get more of attendance depending on what's on the agenda. In terms of agenda production, working with the chair, the actual staff reports, analysis that goes into developing recommendations, and then the meeting itself, and then agenda meeting minutes. On average, just not including planning commissions, about 30 to 40 hours per meeting for staff time. That's not just one person. That's the accumulation of all the staff that go into generating the content, hosting the meeting, and then doing the minutes. So it's gives you a sense. I don't know what the cost is because it's various levels of staff.
Right. But usually high level staff. Yeah, department heads.
Definitely in the attending the meeting and developing staff reports.
Right. Well, I think it was important to just get a sense of what these various options, when we're talking about citizen involvement and engagement, what the costs are as well as the benefits. So thank you very much. That was my question.
Good. Any other questions? No? If not, I'll open it up for public comment on item C-2. Any members of the public wishing to come forward? And Bob, welcome.
In my prior public comment, I forgot to put my name, Bob Keller, citizen of Morro Bay, staff, council. But anyway, I think the communication and engagement with the staff has been outstanding. For a small community, they do a great job. They should be given kudos. Anyway, I find that for the amount of time they put in, they put a lot of time, so we should give them great attention. And as a Morro Bay citizen, I find the staff very good and very engaging. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. I finally figured out why I keep referring to this as C2. It's because this was one that was postponed, and on the back of the sheet it says C2, but on the front for tonight it's C3. So I'm sorry, community, if I've got you all mixed up there, or audience. This is item C3. I just realized that. Thank you very much. Public comment is still open. Any members of the public wishing to come forward on item C-3, please do so now. Seeing none, I'll close public comment, bring it back to council. This is a discussion item. Staff is looking for any direction with regard to enhancing communication or comments regarding the existing opportunities for communication and input. I might just start by saying that I know communication is a two-way process. One is allowing the public to come and give input to either advisory boards, staff, or council. And I would further divide that into formal and informal opportunities. The formal opportunities are really when members of the public want to come forward in a forum where there is a quorum of individuals, where public comment can be taken and be placed on the record, such as a city council meeting. And I think as a city, we have done extremely well in providing many opportunities for public comment, especially on extremely important items within the city. And that also then includes the advisory boards that allow public comment and take public comment. And then there's the informal kinds of interactions that we have. And informal really is when staff, which staff has a wonderful open door policy, you can call any staff member anytime, literally, and meet with them as a community member one-on-one. If you have groups that you want addressed, staff is always willing to go out and discuss, in my opinion, that I've seen with many different groups and engage with groups. Council members hold office hours, sun and buns. Some of us do informal meetings called town halls. Others have one-on-one meetings, or most of us have one-on-one meetings. And I know we all have an open door policy with regard to any member of the public that would like to meet with us. I believe we do so usually at City Hall or a place that is of their preference. And so I think that informal process is wide open. In addition to that, we have emails. And I know that around council meetings, we get numerous emails, but also in between that, there are a significant number of email communications that we get and respond to. And so in my opinion, I did ask this to be a goal 2 years ago for the city because I felt that we could improve. And since Mr. Collins has engaged in this and become our new city manager, I believe the engagement with the community has increased significantly, and we have been provided with many new opportunities for that. And so I'm concerned about, again, staff time and capacity. I think, in my opinion, we offer many, many different engagement, involvement opportunities, both formally and informally to the community. And personally, I do like some of the new ideas that you're beginning to implement, but don't personally have the desire to see any more added to the burden of staff and or council. And so with that, I'll take other comments.
Yeah, let me respond to that a little bit because I agree with you. I think we're doing a tremendous job right now in working with City Manager Collins. A number of things are being covered very well right now. I must say, in deference to Chief Jody Cox, who is starting his cop in a neighborhood program and also partnering with Neighborhood Watch, that this motivated me and made me think about that we do need to get into the neighborhoods more. There, obviously, we do a lot digitally in communicating with people. But one thing I learned when I was campaigning and knocking on doors is the huge number of people who do not do internet, do not read a newspaper, and half the time won't answer their phone unless they recognize the number. So that's kind of the group that I want to connect with. And to me, it's about keeping our neighborhoods strong, which are under threat right now with vacation rentals and second homeowners. I want to reach out to second homeowners so that they're more involved in the city and understand what the issues are. So really for me, it's that personal connectivity, the engagement, the open discussions. I'm planning on having town hall meetings that will be completely open to people with a facilitator. You can come and talk about whatever you want. Those are the kinds of things and that I want to try and make happen with this goal. And perhaps more importantly is we have a lot of serious issues we talk about all the time. It wouldn't hurt us to have a little more fun. So I'm a big fan of neighborhood barbecues and potlucks, and I know Manager Collins has done that at Santa Cruz successfully. So that's kind of the thrust of what I'm looking to do here. The last thing I want to do is burden staff. I believe most of these things can be done without a lot of staff assistance and input. So that's kind of my vision for this particular goal.
Thank you. Other comments?
Well,
Carlos, yes.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. You know, in my experience, there's a real small group of people that pay very, very, very close attention to everything that the council is doing, and they attend advisory board meetings, and they give public comment. And I think we honestly know what those folks think. We may not always agree with them, but they always have an opportunity to talk to us. I'm more concerned about the rest of the public that we don't seem to reach in that kind of a way, and that's why I was so excited about POLCO. So from my point of view, I would like to see us try to expand participation in POLCO. And I'm not sure how to do that, but I had some ideas about even at festivals handing out cards and making sure that, or we could even do it as council members, alert people when we go out in the community to try to get more people signed up, because you really want to know what the silent majority is thinking, and we don't have a good way of finding that out. The other thing that occurred to me is that perhaps we could reach out more to community organizations and let them talk to their members. And I was very pleased to hear Linda, a friend of mine, mention that as a way that we could. And I know that I, as a council member, would be happy to go out to some of these community organizations, just talk about the city and what current issues are, and then let them reach out to their members to educate. So that is really my bigger concern. And if we do have a subcommittee, I'd be happy to be on it, because this is an issue that I'm very concerned about and have always cared deeply about. And I am one of those who don't have regular office hours, but honestly, I am always available, and I will take any call, and I will meet with any citizen anywhere who wants to meet with me. So those are my thoughts on the issue.
Thank you.
But I also agree with you that we do a good job, I think, right now.
Comments to my left here.
Yes. I'm very happy with the efforts that staff is taking right now to reach out to the community, and I'm not sure that there are cost-effective ways to add to that. I agree with Marlis. I'd like to see POLCO used more. And Jeff echoed what I found when I campaigned is there's a lot of people in this town who don't care. They live their lives, and they don't need to come to meetings in the evenings. They have their own preferences, and I respect and honor that. But I do feel a personal obligation, as does Jeff and Marlis, to reach out to everyone. Walking door to door is the best way to engage people, but it is very time consuming. But we can do what we can do. And I really like what Marlis says about reaching out to the community organizations and anybody who ever needs a speaker, I'm sure any one of us be very happy to come and talk to people. about how the city works and what citizens can do to engage and participate and to influence the actions of council and staff. So,
thank you, Councilmember Davis. Councilmember Addis.
Well, I want to thank the chief for the efforts of the police department with the Citizens Academy and the concentration on the neighborhood specifically. I think that's a strong thing that our city's doing and a new thing that our city's doing. I would agree with my colleagues. I think it's incumbent upon us to be out there and connecting with the groups. And if Jeff's having a barbecue, please invite me. I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to get out there, but we have what appears to be a budget crisis, which is how we started this meeting, and we have what appears to be a major staff shortage, given the comments I heard earlier from going from 104 employees down to 97.5 city employees, and so it doesn't seem to me that at this time this is something that staff should be digging into more, but that maybe those of us on council should be doing more outreach, more office hours. Mine are June 18th and July 25th. You're all invited. And I'll be at Jeff's barbecue.
Great. I just wanted to add the comment. Thank you, Councilmember Heller, and a number of you also echoed it. The same thing when I knocked on doors. There are a number of people that just aren't engaged that are very hard to reach, and Red's right. I think it's knocking on doors, which takes a lot of time and one-on-one conversations. I have found, though, in the last 6 weeks, I've been to three community organizations where I was able to speak, saw a lot of people that I never see. And so I would encourage council to look at a number of community organizations, invite yourself to be invited. They're very welcoming and open to receiving information and updates regarding the city, and I found it very helpful. Not only service groups, but individual groups that have formed, very eye-opening with regard to the input, like realtors groups, specialty groups, those kinds of things. So I'll just add that. Are you good with input? Everybody has spoken?
Yes, I think.
Okay.
I think what we hear
further direction?
Is our continue as we are and really try to maximize the existing efforts, especially POLCO. One of the council action items was coordination with community groups to improve that. And so maybe instead of, I can help council sort of be more clued in with them and provide that as a resource to those groups and find a way to work together. And eventually you could lead to things like neighborhood block parties if we can get to that point. I think there is real value in that. I definitely saw that in Santa Cruz where elected officials and staff could meet people where they live. It makes just changes Absolutely. The dynamic incredibly. So we could sort of build to that if through the community group approach.
Yeah. Getting into the community organizations, the churches, the synagogues, those kinds of things are important areas to meet many different people. So thank you for that.
Could I just add one more that I forgot to mention? I think the city manager updates are so good. I think it would be helpful if occasionally you at least summarize some of the accomplishments just in a meeting or issues that might be coming up that the public may need to pay attention to because I know that more people watch the council meetings.
So under the city manager updates,
At a meeting, yeah. Just to summarize some of what might be going on in City Hall that public may not be aware of.
They're more interesting than our announcements.
Right. Anyway, that's just a suggestion.
Okay. Great. Thank
Don't
you.
Don't stress out over it,
I
though.
Never.
That concludes item C-3. Got that right this time. In the interest of Council Member Public Health, we will take a 3-minute break, and they will be back to finish item C-4. Thank you. We are back, Morro Bay City Council, May 28th, 2019, with our last agenda item, C-4. This is an item to discuss and consider changing the City Council regular meeting end time. Consideration of resolution number 39-19, amending the city council policies and procedures to change the city council regular meeting end time. With that, Mr. Collins, are you going to introduce this? Or?
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
Fourth time tonight, I know.
Fourth time tonight.
You're missing me. So the recommendation is for council to adopt resolution 39-19, which would amend the policies on meeting guidelines and procedures to change the regular city council meeting span from 5:30 to 10:30 to a new span of 5:30 to 9:30. Of course, council can choose to have a different end time, whether it's 10 o'clock, or maintain the existing span of 5:30 to 10:30. There is no fiscal impact from any of the alternatives or the recommendation. By way of background, City Council requested this as a future agenda item at the end of the second meeting in March to bring back and look at a 9:30 stop time. As Council will recall, we did modify the meeting schedule. It used to be a 6 o'clock start time with 11 o'clock hard stop unless there's a majority of Council wants to continue the meeting. That was modified to a 5:30 start time and a 10:30 end time. And then there came this request to look at a different end time. So as was noted in the January 22nd, 2019 meeting where this was originally heard, we really tried to find a way to meet kind of in the middle where we would allow for the greatest level of public participation in attendance in the meetings. I typically see that in the beginning of meetings, and as we get on to the later evening, we start to see a precipitous decline, at least in physical attendance. Not clear if that plays out in TV land. There'd be no way to know for sure, but typically we see attendance diminish around 8:30 or 9 o'clock if we get that far. In preparing this item, city staff reviewed the duration of all regular city council meetings for the past 18 months. And based upon that review, we learned that regular city council meetings averaged about 4 hours to 4 hours and 15 minutes, including 2018, the entire year, and up to this point, 2019. So just looking at it from that vantage point, 5:30 and 9:30 is 4 hours that could accommodate the typical council meeting for the last year and a half. Approval of that recommended change to the meeting time would also meet the consensus of council that we heard at the March 1st community forum on city goals and objectives, where we heard that council was interested in not necessarily shorter meetings, but more efficient meetings. And part of that is long, unnecessary long meetings. And so this condensing of the span of meetings would sort of fit into that consensus that we heard from council. And also just hearing from council about how we can make changes to staff, preparing items in advance so that you have PowerPoints ahead of time for the general business items and public hearing items. We did that today. Of course, we typically try to do those on Mondays. Monday was a holiday, but we did get those to you in advance so you have time to review. You're fully prepared for the meeting, in addition to reading staff reports. Also, that those PowerPoints maybe have a limitation on the number of slides. That doesn't mean that you get to four-point font and put every single word of your report on the slides, but that you really condense it to the most salient points, summarized, really guiding towards council discussion and not hearing laborious and boring staff reports. That's not our goal, at least not mine. Maybe Rob Leivick. I'm just kidding, Rob. You know, I love him.
He has a sense of humor.
Yes. To see if he was paying attention. You know. No, he has really good PowerPoints. So we're really going to do what we can as staff to do our best to make the meetings efficient. So we think all those things in mind, we could make a 5:30 and a 9:30 schedule work if we limit the PowerPoints, provide them ahead of time. We also limit the duration of the PowerPoints, so if it's 10 slides, that it shouldn't take more than 10 minutes to get through that staff. And I think we do a pretty good job of that, but we could formalize that to support council, and they're having good discussions. So that's sort of the thought process. Of course, the alternative to go to 10 o'clock, but still sort of meet the average meeting time. Just really just putting this out there for discussion for council. Happy to answer any questions you have.
Great. Thank you for that, that this was agendized and consideration previously. Council end times were 11 p.m., as you know. And with that, I'll open it up for any council questions you might have of staff. Anybody have any questions? Sure. Yes, Councilmember Heller.
So if we change to this time, does it still... It's a hard date, hard time, but it can be extended. If
yes, sir.
A quorum, is it?
So that's
it
correct.
The same.
Okay. Yes, it would work the same. It's just 9:30 would be the stop time, or 10 would be the stop time, and require a majority. Yes.
Yeah. Other questions? Seeing none, I'll open up for public comment. Any members of the public wishing to speak on item C-4, please come forward at this time. Bob? I know you're going to get up, so welcome, Mr. Bob Keller.
Bob Keller, Citizen Morro Bay. I agree with the staff report. I think we could get more done in a limited amount of time than a lot long time, because we can condense things down, I feel that way, and be more productive. So I support the staff report. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Public comment is still open. Any members of the public wishing to come forward, please do so at this time. Looking around, seeing none, I will close public comment and bring it back to council for discussion. Who would like to start? Councilmember Addis.
I want to thank Councilmember Davis. I believe he was the one that first brought this up for possible future agenda item. And I want to thank staff for the PowerPoint presentation today and in the future. That's extremely helpful. I do see this as a way to lower barriers for participation. I know we just had a discussion around communication and how to get more people involved. And I think having shorter meetings that are more productive, that allow people to go to bed or get ready for work the next day within a reasonable amount of time, is something that can help us increase participation. So from that perspective, I would support something like this.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your staff work on this, Scott. To me, setting an earlier adjournment time is a signal that we want to have more efficient meetings and that we respect the time of our audience, both who come to the meetings and who watch us on television, and we respect the time of our staff who have already worked a full day before they even come to this meeting and whom we expect to be at work tomorrow morning. It's not a hard adjournment. We always have the option, if there is an important discussion going on, to extend the meeting time. And I know in the past that we have done that. But to me, it's important that we show people that we respect their time and that we consider their participation to be valuable. So,
thank you. Councilmember McPherson.
Well, I'm going to respectfully disagree with my colleagues. First of all, I don't believe that this sends the right message to the public at all about our work. Democracy is not efficient, and I think to put an arbitrary end date on our council meetings sends the absolute wrong message to people. We have a lot of a variety of issues that come to us, and some of them are complicated, and there's a lot of public interest in it, and I would hate to think that at 9:30 we say, we'll all have to agree here now. No, I think we have to allow the time it takes to discuss and do our business. And on average, it's going to take 4 hours. But when we have a difficult issue, it's not. It's not going to take four, and we should take the time it takes to resolve the issue. I did look at what other cities do in San Luis Obispo County, And the majority start at 6 and end at 11 with the option of continuing beyond it. One starts at 5:30, one starts at 6:30. So there are different start times, but really you have to let the public say, and if they come to a meeting, they need the opportunity to speak. And one of the reasons that our council meetings have gone long is that we've had a very difficult topic and issue on our agenda where we've had 30, 40, 50 people come and want to speak. And obviously, we want to hear all of them. And we still have to do the business of this city. And we have placed aggressive goals on our council. And we expect them to get them done. And if we arbitrarily close a meeting because we didn't get to all of the items on the agenda, then we're going to put our staff behind. Then they're still going to have to bring back those items that we didn't get to at the next meeting. And what is going to happen is that we are not going to be able to achieve our objectives. So we really have to allow the time it takes to do our business. So I certainly don't want to change it to 9:30. We now say 10:30, and I would like to, if we want to have an end date or end time, that's what I would stick with. So that's my comments.
Thank you. Councilmember Heller.
Am I supposed to sort this all out?
No, you're first of all. You're the third. Yeah, you're the fourth.
First of all, Councilmember McPherson, I understand. I really appreciate you standing up and commenting in that fashion. I've gone back and forth on this, but I think the best thing that we have going on right now is the diversity of opinion on an issue that is not necessarily earth-shaking, but on the other hand, it's important to a lot of people. I've gotten some emails, or probably all of us have, about limiting a public comment and so forth. My inclination is, I believe going beyond that time limit is something can be a very quick vote. I think we all understand that if there's 100 people or 50 people who want to say public comment, we will stay here till 2 in the morning, frankly, to listen to it. I think we all feel that way. I think the meetings can be run more efficiently, and I think tonight's a very good example of it. And I would look to staff to let us know if we're not making progress through the items we need to be addressing, then let us know. You know, we're going to need a longer meeting, or you know, let the council know that. Otherwise, I depend on staff to keep it going. I think we can make the meetings even more efficient. I'm not a huge fan of presentations. I'm sorry to say that, but it's just the truth. We do have a lot of important business to take. My time is important. Staff's time is important. The people who come and sit out there, meeting after meetings, time is important. And I think by shortening the meeting, we put much greater value on the time of everybody involved, and we're more focused. But I would never give up public comment or anything of a nature that might infringe upon the people's right to know what's going on here with the government. So those are my thoughts.
Wow, good discussion. So I agree with Councilmember McPherson's comments about maybe the past having very difficult issues that required a tremendous amount of debate, but also significant public input was taken, or public comment was taken. That's something that really is the core of these meetings, is public comment and hearing from our public, and that's something that I would never want to shut down prematurely, obviously. I have full confidence in this council that if we're involved in a difficult issue that there's significant interest in from the public, that there would be a willing vote to extend beyond whatever hard stop time that was set by any policy that we established, because that's the kind of council that we have. And I've appreciated that in the past and do appreciate that now and in the future. The issue also has to do with comments that I heard prior, actually, over the last few months, that had to do with folks not wanting to stay from the public and try to wait for public comment until 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night. That's difficult for members of the public, especially when they have concerns about, even though they can give public comment on an item that's on the agenda at the beginning of the meeting. They want to be here to hear the dialogue that occurs and then give public comment, at least the majority I've talked to, at that time. And so doing that at 11 o'clock after, or 10:30 after sitting through this meeting waiting for the last item is very difficult, not only for the public, but I think for us. A lot of times we have pre-meetings, and we're starting at, like today, 4 o'clock, and going until 10:30 or 11 o'clock is very taxing. I know I get less effective as time goes on at the end of long meetings, and so thank you, Redmond. So with all that, and I also got those emails, Councilmember Heller, that raised some concerns about limiting public comment. I would never want to do that. One of the things that I try to do with our city manager is make sure that the most important items are placed up front on the agenda, and that those are always allowed adequate time for discussion and information. The items that I won't call them slam dunk items, but maybe don't require as much time, usually are moved towards the end of the agenda, and we move very quickly. One of the emails I did get was a recommendation that maybe council member debate could be shortened as opposed to lengthening the meeting. Now, that's not my comment. I'm just bringing that to you guys as a recommendation from the public. You know, no need to ask 100 questions and or each one comment on everyone's comment. And that, again, is not my reflection. That's a reflection from a member of the public. And you know, I do support that. We do create context a lot of times, and we do ask questions on purpose that have been asked, because we have people out there that do not have context. I also think that presentations create context for members of the public that are not involved as we are in the everyday business of the city, and that's extremely important also. All of that being said, it doesn't really matter to me what you want. If you want to stop at 9:30 or 10:30, it's fine. I have full confidence that you, as a council, will move forward. Beyond that, if we are involved in an item that's important to the public and that needs to be considered after that time. Those are my comments. I'll entertain a motion.
I move the council adopt resolution number 39-19, amending City Council Policies and Procedures Manual, Chapter 1, Meeting Guidelines and Procedures, Section 1.1.2, to change the regular City Council meeting span from 5:30 to 10:30 p.m. to a new span of 5:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Davis for the recommendation by staff, second by Councilmember Addis. Any further discussion?
I will comment on the public
sure.
comment piece.
Yes, indeed.
That I've heard that as well from people, that it's very difficult for them to stay until 10, 10:30, 11, to be able to, whether they're at home watching on TV or they come to the meeting, they want to hear the discussion. I just want to echo that as well, because I wouldn't want anybody to think that it would be my intention to shut down public comment. My campaign largely focused on increasing communication, and I see this as a way, in particular for working people, for parents of young children, to be able to get engaged and get involved because the meetings don't go so late. So I just want to reiterate that point.
Thank you.
And I would like to say to Council Member McPherson's comments that I, for one, would never stop the democratic process based simply upon a time constraint. We were elected to do a job, and that is the most important thing to me, is that we accomplish the city's business. And if we are engaged in an important debate at adjournment time, I will always vote to continue.
Okay. Yeah, let me just add, I just feel that an issue takes the amount of time it takes, and that's what we should allow to have happen. As we know, if we don't have a full agenda, we're going to stop early. So on average, our council meeting is going to stop at 9:30 or often earlier than that. But if we have an issue where it needs to go longer, I would like to see us do that. And I don't think that an arbitrary end time helps in that process at all. That's my only concern. I think it just sends the wrong message to the public. So anyway, I've already said my piece. Sure. Thank you.
And I'll just comment on that we've always had a hard stop time. This is just changing it, so just FYI. All right, with that, yes, Council Member. Yeah. City Manager Collins.
You guys have a harder job than I do. City Manager Collins will do. Wanted to inject, you know, when if this is approved, just for consideration, when you would want this to go into effect? Would it be, I didn't put this in the report, my apologies. Would it be at the next meeting, or would we want to do what we did last time and wait a month to... Or does it?
I'll look to the individual who made the motion. Council Member Addis, I believe, was the first. Or Davis, I'm sorry.
I would expand my motion to make the effective date with the first meeting of July.
Okay. Addition to the motion, is there okay by the second?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So the motion is staff recommendation beginning with the first city council meeting in July, and seconded by Council Member Addis. Roll call vote.
Council Member Davis?
Yes.
Council Member Addis?
Yes.
Council Member Heller?
Yes.
Council Member McPherson?
No.
Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-1.
Thank you. That brings us to council declaration of future agenda items. Look to my right. None. Look to my left.
I have something.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. I don't know that it's an agenda item, but I do believe our investment policies are coming forward typically when we adopt the budget. And Morro Bay has a climate action plan. Morro Bay has some things around climate. We don't have any financial policies that allow us to prioritize investments in companies that are specifically taking action to combat climate change. And I'm asking if we could look at some form of policy that would allow investment in such companies when that investment won't negatively impact our rate of return, so that we have financial policies that would be in line with our thinking around climate. We've passed a number of resolutions around fracking, around oil drilling, around, you know, things to keep a focus on our clean environment. And given that we are a coastal city, that's going to be particularly affected if we don't take radical action. So what I'm asking is that when those policies come forward, we could look at something that would allow us to prioritize that type of investment when there's two choices of equal value.
Prioritize but not limit, I hear you saying.
Prioritize but not limit. So if one investment would, if the, lack of a better term, if the cleaner investment would give worse returns, we wouldn't be choosing that. But if the cleaner investment would give us at least equal returns, that's the one we would lean towards, and that we would have a policy that provides the city that kind of direction.
I would just like our finance director to comment on the kinds of investments that we're limited to. I don't believe we invest in stocks, so if you could just comment on the kinds of investments that a city can actually make.
Sure. So our investment policy outlines all of those. We primarily hold CDs, certificates of deposits. There are several cities that have moved towards adopting kind of broader range socially conscious investment policies. I think the council member is suggesting as more of a broad statement that would, again, prioritize if there's no net impact. So, you know, if there's a CD offered by Wells Fargo and one offered by another banking industry, we look at their kind of investment practices and support and see if we should prioritize one or the other.
Is that... A clarification. Okay, good. Yeah. So I'm just looking for heads to nod. Is there support to agendize that?
Would it come up in our policy?
It
wouldn't be a separate agenda item, but rather when you come up with the investment policy.
You're looking.
It would come up with the investment policy, but I wanted to bring it up now.
So you want to consider it when the next review of the investment, next routine review?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
So typically we include the investment and it's adopted with the budget report. So we can bring back, if it's council wish, we can bring back some proposed language that could be incorporated and you could discuss it with that.
Yeah, with that I would support that as well.
Sure.
Red?
Yeah. I would support that. I have one question. You'd mentioned climate action plan. How do you see that working in with what we're talking about here?
Well, I just think the two would be sort of complementary, that we have a climate action plan that allows us to do some things and that now we would have financial policies that would have some emphasis there. So I see it as, I think addressing the climate crisis is going to take radical action, and I think having both the action plan and financial policies and then whatever else we can do, we need to keep edging towards, you know, making every effort to combat climate change. So I see them just as complementary, but not necessarily linked.
Okay.
And it may be broader than that. There may be other social justice issues that companies are involved in that would be contrary to council policy. So it would be, would you be okay with a broader look?
I would absolutely, but my emphasis with this particular item would be climate action, but absolutely.
Since we're
reviewing it anyway. If there was tobacco or, you know what
right,
I mean, there's
exactly.
other stuff, absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Is there head nods with that? I'm looking for a consensus. Yes? Okay. Thank you. Any other? Okay. If not, I will adjourn the meeting. The next regular meeting of the Morro Bay City Council will be held on Tuesday, June 11th, 2019 at 5:30 p.m. at the Veterans Memorial Hall located at 209 Surf Street, Morro Bay, California. That's it. Thank you.